Hello and welcome to Book Bagger Podcast. Today I'm joined by special guest Becky Jerrams, author of The Songs You've Never Heard, written with Ellie Wyatt. Becky, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to read Becky's bio, which is taken from the Songs You've Never Heard website. Becky Jerrams is a singer-songwriter and YA author from the coastal town of Portsmouth, UK. Becky's love of words began as a child when her life's mission was to read every Jacqueline Wilson book ever published. After studying music performance at college, she worked many glamorous jobs, including selling DVDs at Blockbuster and counting toilet seats in Homebase, also to support her ambition of becoming a professional songwriter. She has since had her songs used in movies, adverts, and played with the international artists, including K-pop group, girl group, Red Velvet. One day, when she was feeling particularly fed up with the Shark Tank, known as the music industry, he decided to write a novel for fun and post it online. The novel gained over 2 million hits, plus thousands of encouraging messages from readers all over the world. Suddenly, a whole new dream became clear to her. So, just to confirm, how many Jacqueline Wilson books have you read?
I feel like as I got older, I've lost track of, because she writes so much, but I'm sure I've got about half of her 100 book catalogue, and I'm continuing to read the new ones that she releases now as an adult. So yeah, I'm trying to check them all off the list.
How does it feel like knowing that they're written for middle grade or young adult and reading it as an adult?
I think you definitely read it with a different perspective when you're a child. You see the child character and you're seeing it completely through their eyes. And as an adult, you're seeing it also from the adult's eyes. So it's really interesting. Like, yeah, probably if I was to go back and read some of those books now as an adult, I would see it so differently as a child. And yeah, I love that you can have that dual kind of perspective all throughout her books.
So I'm going to get into some of the questions about your book now. So yeah, you and Ellie described this book as a booksicle, meaning a book with musical elements. Did you both pen the word, or is it a pre-existing word?
So we came up with the term booksicle. I think we did anyway, because I've never seen it used anywhere else. So we are claiming the term. I'm somebody that always blends words together all the time and tends to just make up silly words all the time, so it's kind of my hobby. So yeah, with book and a musical, it just felt like the obvious kind of choice for what we were going to be calling this project.
Yeah, so how did you come to write this book? Did you pitch the idea to Ellie first before writing?
So I initially wrote the first draft in 2017. And I went to Ellie, initially it was for the music side, but then when she came on board, it really became a co-written project, because she had to tweak the characters, the storylines. We went through together and really like polished up every line, every word choice. We cut things, we added things. So it kind of grew from there and became a co-written project. And then obviously all of the music side, we both co-wrote together as well.
Was there anything you had to edit just because it wasn't flowing or didn't work with the storyline?
Well, when we finished the initial draft, and we got our first agent, who was, she's a lovely lady called Jill, who works at Bath Literary Agency. So she was who helped us get the publishing deal for the book. But it's an agent's job to tell you like what needs polishing up before pitching it out to editors and publishing houses. So she advised us, she said she really loved the story, but it was too long. And most YA books kind of average out at about usually between 70,000 and at the top end about 90,000. And I think that our first draft was about 120,000. It was really long. And she said, I'm really keen on it, but you're going to have to cut it down if I'm going to take it further. So that was kind of our challenge. We knew if we wanted to move on with the book and, you know, take it to the next level, we were going to have to cut some words. So it was really tough. But once you kind of get into that cutting mode, you realise there are scenes that are just written, they're just filling up the time, they're not adding anything to the story, they're nice texture. But they're just not adding anything. So there was kind of scenes where there was more characters coming into the yogurt shop and more scenes at school and just sort of side characters where we'd have long conversations with them. I think there was like some chat with some of the people at the open mic night. And we had a few little side characters, but we thought really it's fun. It makes it a nice background and a nice setting, but what does it add to move the story forward? So we found when we cut those conversations, it actually didn't affect the story at all. So yeah, it was just getting in that mindset of asking ourselves, does this like have a point? And if it doesn't, it needs to go.
Was there any reason why you decided to make Meg work at a frozen yogurt shop?
I think I just thought that it was a really fun kind of visual setting for a job. And I loved the idea of her having, you know, this beak hat and this horrible uniform that she had to wear. And then with Brighton, I definitely think of like independent stores, independent food shops, the seaside. So in terms of like the setting and the theme, it just felt like a really fun place. And as someone who's always worked in retail, like I kind of wanted to have that kind of element as well of like little bits of jobs that I've never worked in the food industry though, but in terms of just the retail side, it kind of reflected that as well.
Cool. So continuing back to your partnership with Ellie, how did you make it sound like a continuous viewpoint, like coming from the main character as one?
So in terms of like both of us kind of having, making sure it sound like one voice rather than two, I think it was just a lot of honing really, a lot of going through and checking word choices, checking jokes. There was definitely times where we might be going back and forward and suddenly it sounds like maybe one of our voices was stronger than the others, or we also had to be really careful with some of our references because also we're a lot older than the 17-year-old characters. So maybe on some of our drafts, we might have referenced an old TV show or an old band, and we had to be really careful to think, actually, you know, maybe teenagers wouldn't know this reference or it wouldn't be an obvious reference for them. So we were just really careful about honing it and checking our exact word choices and making sure that everything sounded like Meg's voice and didn't feel like it was going too out of character. So yeah, just a lot of editing and back and forward, but there were probably drafts where things did sound a bit like either like me or either like Ellie, but yeah, just working on it and also having a big team on it as well. They picked up things that I think there was one line where we used the swear word git, and one of the younger editors said, I haven't heard somebody say the term git for about 20 years. I said, oh my God, we're showing our age now, get rid of it. So it was that kind of stuff that we were just really, you know, we had people to help us to hone it.
Yeah. So when it came to the actual writing, did you write one character and Ellie wrote another character?
No, it was all kind of one big project. We didn't really go backward and forward, but it was more that together we went through each paragraph and like as a team just honed and honed it. But yeah, we did talk about maybe doing it that way, but we thought maybe it would sound a bit too like divided. But yeah, there was definitely, I guess, characters which Ellie could lend her voice and experience to more than me and vice versa. I'm an only child, so I know that Ellie had a lot of input into the Casper and Meg fight scenes and having that like sibling relationship, because I don't have that as my own personal experience. So she was able to really like beef up that scene. Just from the experience of being a sister, you know.
So in the book, Meg and Matthew often talk and chat about their top five songs, one of them being the top five songs that inspired Meg to make music. Did your list the same as Meg's, or do you have any other songs that inspired you to make music?
My list is definitely a lot older than Meg's, being from like a different generation. So the songs that we chose for Meg were songs that we feel are really inspiring songs that we love, but were more like, had we been 17, I think these are the songs that would have really inspired us to write. For me, it was definitely people like Tori Amos, Alanis Morissette. There's kind of a grungy girl called Liz Phair, who I used to really love growing up. And that kind of like alternative female songwriter scene was what I was really inspired by. But me and Ellie both have a huge love for Taylor Swift as well, and she's like one of our biggest inspirations, so that was something we always agreed on. And I think Taylor Swift has like a million references in the book, and we just didn't want to cut any of them. We were like, no, she can be the one exception. They can have lots of different songs referenced.
Do you have a favorite Taylor Swift song?
I feel like my favorite Taylor Swift song probably just changes all the time. But yeah, I really love all the stuff at the moment from Folklore. I love that song Invisible String, is really sweet. And I think Shake It Off as well is just like an all-time Taylor Swift favorite. And yeah, probably if you asked me every single day, I'd give you a different answer every day of the week. So,
so do you have any funny moments that came out of writing this book?
Funny moments. I mean, we definitely had lots of like laughs and giggles in the studio, especially recording some of the songs like with Maxi Me, the song about the cat. Like, that was a really funny moment. And Ellie played kazoo on that one. So we've got like some footage, I think, of her live recording the kazoo and just us bursting into laughter after she recorded it. And yeah, we were umming and ahhing, like, do we keep it in? Is it too silly? And I said, no, you've got to keep the kazoo in. And also just thinking of like some of the funny lines as well and some of the jokes. Like, one of the fun bits was when we had the story going through and like trying to add funny imagery and funny jokes and funny dialogue. And I think one of my favorite lines we came up with was something about Casper being like a T-Rex with IBS and stomping around the house like a T-Rex with IBS, and just coming up with these like funny like images was definitely like really funny moments.
So of course your book is inspired by music, but do you listen to music while you write?
I do listen to music, and then I get to a point like I'll probably listen for like an hour and a half, and then suddenly I think I need silence. I suddenly turn it off. So I go from one extreme to the other, and it's really strange, because if I'm in the mood for music, I love listening to it, and if I really just feel like I just need to think, I might have to turn it off. So yeah, I listen to a point and then I get overwhelmed.
So what sort of songs does your playlist typically feature? Are you one for like just pop music or a whole genre?
I love so many different genres. I mean, I'm definitely a big pop fan and I do write pop music, but I love indie, I love rock, I love musical theatre songs. I even like, I quite like, I found recently kind of liking those playlists like 90s hip hop kind of stuff. Like, that can be quite fun. And, you know, like the lo-fi beats kind of thing, they're quite good for when you're like working, because it can just be on in the background, just like as the background noise. But yeah, I'm very much like, I just love anything which has got a strong melody and tells a story. And to me, it could be in like any genre. Like, if it's got something cool to say and a great hook, then I will probably want to listen to it.
So what came first, the book or the album?
So in most cases of the songs, we had the storyline first and we wrote the song to fit around the storyline. But there was one song which Ellie and I had written quite a few years ago. It was Didn't I? And it's one of our all-time favourite songs that we'd ever written together. And we knew that doing this project, we really wanted to include the song Didn't I? So with that song, I did kind of write some of Alana's storyline and backstory with her ex-boyfriend Dylan to fit that song so that we could have it as a moment in the book. But yeah, for a lot of the others, we had the scene, we knew what kind of song it was going to be. Like, we knew we wanted a cat love song. We knew we needed a song when Meg was going to reveal herself to Matty, and just all these moments where we knew there were big moments. We wanted an emotional scene, an emotional song. And yeah, so we kind of set ourselves a song brief to write to the characters. But yeah, Didn't I was the one that kind of pre-existed.
I'm curious, how did you and Ellie meet each other?
We actually met, it must have been, we were trying to work out how long ago we actually first met, not that long ago, but I met Ellie just before she had her daughter Alice, and Alice is now 12, 13. So it's about that maybe 13, 14 years ago that we first met. And it was at a party in London for a publishing company that we had both worked with. And it was a Christmas party and they invited me along to come and sing a couple of songs. And I was quite young, hadn't really done anything like this before, definitely never been invited to a music party in London. It was like a really big deal for me. And I researched who was going to be at the party because I really wanted to make some connections and meet some other songwriters. And I saw that Ellie was there with her writing partner at the time. And I kind of went wanting to get to meet her and chat and see if what I did was something she would be interested in. I performed at the party. She really liked the set. I gave her my demo CD. We chatted for a bit at the party. And then later on, she asked me to come and do a songwriting session with her in Brighton. And it all just kind of grew from there. So yeah, it was a really cool kind of first meeting, and just cool to look back to see, like, you know, how far things have come from that first initial first party when we didn't know each other.
And what was the main reason for setting this book in Brighton, where Ellie is from?
Well, Ellie lives in Brighton, and although I live in Portsmouth, I actually went to music college in Brighton. I went to a college called Access to Music. I went a couple of days a week, and I had friends who were at Brighton University, and I would go and stay over in their student flat for a few days when I was at college. So even though I don't live there, I kind of feel like it's my second home, and I knew it really well. And it was the first time where I kind of got to explore a city by myself. And what I love about Brighton is that it's just so vibrant. There's so many really cool shops, and it's very creative, and there's loads of artistic people everywhere. And not that Southsea, where I live, isn't like that, but I think Brighton just has a lot of kind of iconic scenes where we could set things in. So it just felt like a really good choice for this particular storyline.
On average, how long does it take you to write a novel?
To write the first draft, it kind of depends, because there's been some that I've just literally whizzed through. Because I've written quite a lot of stories outside of the Songs You've Never Heard, either back in the old days when I used to write for Wattpad, and it was kind of my first hobby, and it was me first starting out, and then later after Songs, I've been working on a few bits and pieces. And it kind of depends on the style of the story, how complicated it is, how much time I've got in my daily like schedule to work on it. But I would say on average about 6 months to a year, and then probably like a year on and off with like editing and, you know, all of the stuff that comes with polishing it all up and making it shine. But also included in that timeline is probably a lot of just waiting around and times when you're not actually working on it, but like thinking about it as well. Like I think sometimes you just have like weeks where you're just planning and thinking of your characters, and it feels like you're not doing anything, but you're actually mentally getting everything all together. So yeah, including the thinking time, I think maybe about a year.
Talking about characters, do you have any characters that you really struggled to write?
I don't feel like I really struggled to write any of them. There's definitely characters that were more complex than others, and trying to like deepen their characters maybe was trickier than others. I know with TJ, we really had a few different goes about like his backstory and what kind of a character he was. So maybe he was one of the trickier characters, and his story changed a fair bit from the initial version to later on. And obviously Casper is quite a complex character, and he's definitely somebody whose sort of motivations grew and deepened as we kind of honed the book. But I would say the two girls are probably the easiest characters to write because they were the most similar to us. It's probably, yeah, getting to the boys, which is somehow is a bit harder when writing as a girl. But hopefully we managed to still achieve a good result.
What is the hardest part of editing?
The hardest part, I think, is just that it's really intense and it just goes on, and it's like doing endless homework. And it's really one of these things where you use a different part of your brain. The creative, I know that there's some writers who really don't like the drafting and love editing. And I find it so bizarre because I'm the absolute opposite. Like, I love drafting, and editing to me is very like laborious. But then at the same time, it's using that side of your brain that loves words and logic. And when you, it's almost like that same feeling of doing like a puzzle and trying to fit everything together. And then when it clicks, you feel really like it's really rewarding. So it's just getting into that like more logical mindset. So I think for me, it's like the lack of creativity. It's more the precision with editing. But at the same time, as somebody who does love words and puzzles and things, I think when you get in that mindset, it can be really enjoyable as well. But yeah, I prefer writing to editing, definitely.
Do you have a favourite scene from the book?
Ooh, my favourite scene. Well, the scene that we do keep reading out at our book events is the chapter about the doom spiral, and about that thing that creative people go through where they put their creative work out, they get criticized, or you get a bad review and it sets you into a complete doom spiral. So that is a scene that I just feel is like, a lot of people said it's very relatable as a creative person. I've totally gone through this. And I just do love that scene where Meg and Alana like kind of work through their demons of, oh God, it's out there and people don't like it, and kind of come to the realization that it doesn't matter. And yeah, it's almost like art imitates life, because we've had some people who've loved the book, some people who haven't, and it's always really hard to get those less than favorable reviews, and we've almost had to go back to our own scene and remind ourselves, like, you know, why we're doing this and what we're trying to do, and how, you know, it might not be for everyone, but that doesn't mean that it should stop you from being creative.
It's exactly like writing a book. They say like some people will like the book and some people will not.
Yeah I actually heard on a podcast a really great analogy from a YA writer. I think his name is Jason Reynolds. And he said that you could make the most delicious, tastiest steak dinner, most amazing, like all the right seasoning. It's absolutely lovely, all the best ingredients. And you can serve it to somebody and they'll go, I don't like steak, I like fish. So that doesn't mean that your dinner wasn't lovely. It just wasn't the taste of that person. And you're never, ever going to change that. And when I heard that bit of advice, it really clicked in my brain. And I just thought, no, he's so right. And hearing that little story is like, always, yeah, I'm like, they're just a fish person, they're not a steak person, it's fine.
or they could be a pescatarian.
Exactly, they could be veggie, it could be vegan, and you know, yeah. Then it's just not gonna work.
So talking about favorite scenes, do you have a favorite song from the book?
Oh, I think my personal favorite song, well, I love Didn't I, for the reasons I sort of spoke about earlier, because it was our song that we'd already written before the book, and it was real favorite of mine. In terms of the rest of the songs, I think it has to be Scripts, and I just love the fact that it's kind of got such a blend of both of our styles. It's got Ellie strings, it's got my vocals. We had a really great producer who we've known for years called UC, who did the production for us, and he kind of turned what was originally like a ballad sort of song into a more like dancey, upbeat kind of blend of dance and songwriter, and it was totally in a different direction that I wouldn't have expected, but it just made me like love the song even more. So yeah, I just loved that it was one of those things where everybody came together and no one could have made that particular song on their own. It was like such a mix of all of us as being part of it, and that's what I really liked about it.
I think my personal favorite is Domino Effect, because of
Is it really? Is it because of all the harmonies and the two girls?
Probably.
Yeah, like the two girl moments. It's actually, Domino Effect is probably one of the funnest to sing live, because when I perform it with Meg, who plays Alana, the girl who sings as Alana is called Meg, which is a little bit confusing. But so I'm Meg and Meg is Alana. But yeah, when we sing it together with harmonies, it's just really fun to like just blast them out together. So yeah, that's probably my favourite to sing live.
What are your tips for inspiring songwriters or aspiring?
For aspiring songwriters, I think to just be really persistent, to keep writing, to collaborate with all sorts of different people. I think for me, like, I really started to grow once I began to co-write. And I think when you're younger, you can be very much like, oh, I'm very precious. It's, you know, my songs and my story, and no one else can match what I'm doing. Like, you can get very much like that when you're younger. But I feel like when you reach out and share your creations with other people and get their perspective on it as well, it can really help, like, strengthen and evolve your music. So don't be afraid to try new things and to get another person's voice on your song, not like physical or literal voice, but, you know, their style, their stamp onto your song, or maybe their literal voice as well. And yeah, just keep going, keep writing, and don't be afraid to also change things. You know, if something's not working and you think, oh, do you know what, this could be a stronger verse or whatever. So easy to get so used to something when you hear it over and over, but sometimes you just have to flip it up in the air, try something totally new, and actually it works 10 times better. So yeah, just be open all the time, I think.
Who's your dream collaboration or collaborator?
Oh, my dream. Well, obviously Taylor Swift. I feel like Dolly Parton would be an amazing person to meet and write with. And she just has so much wisdom and experience. I also really love, I don't know if you know, there's a singer-songwriter called Ben Folds who plays on piano, and he's so quirky and unusual and like an amazing pianist, and I always feel like he'd be such a cool person to write with. So I could just sit here and probably list like 100 million people, so I'll stop there.
Do you believe in writer's block, and if so, how do you deal with it?
Yes, writer's block is 100% a real thing. And for me, I find, honestly, going for a walk really helps. I live 5 minutes from the seafront, so I can just go out, shake the cobwebs off, go and walk, breathe in the sea air. And sometimes something that's been like stuck in my head, I can just unstick it by walking or swimming or like doing something like physical with your body, because sometimes get your mind kind of racing again. And also sometimes just going back from the start of the book and just taking your steps, like think, okay, this goes to this and this goes to this and this goes to this. And sometimes you can get in a tangle. So if you just go back a few steps and rebuild the path, sometimes that can help as well. I think writer's block just happens when you don't know what you're doing. When you know what you're doing, it's a lot easier. So you just have to figure out and remember what it is you're meant to be trying to do.
So how much do you draft out your books? Do you draft out the whole entire to the end of the book, or do you start writing?
I am reforming. So before, I was very much, I'd have like the key scenes in my mind, I'd sort of have a vague beginning, middle and end, and then I would just write and see where it went. After the experience of having to cut so many words and hone and go back and redraft and edit so much with songs, I'm trying to reform and actually have a much stricter outline for future projects when I'm working on them. And I've found doing that has really taken the pressure off when writing. But even with an outline, I do find you've got to have that wiggle room, because sometimes a character will just do exactly what they want to do. And you think, oh, actually, this build up here would be great. Like, you really can't know some things until you're like in that moment. So I feel like it's good to have that mix of like, you've got an outline, but it's loose enough that you can change it around if you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have mentioned beforehand that you and Ellie are intent on at least writing a sequel to The Song You've Never Heard. So fingers crossed that you get the chance to write it. Whilst we wait to see if anything happens, is there anything you can tease us with about a potential sequel?
Yeah, so at the moment we're kind of unsure if there will be a sequel or not, or if there is a sequel, maybe it will be like a little novella or just something to tie up some of the loose ends. But we've definitely talked about different things that could happen in the future. I feel like I'd like to focus a lot more on Alana. She was a very popular character. I feel like there's a lot of options for storylines with how different Meg and Alana's life is. Meg is like from a very privileged, rich family, whereas Alana is from quite a poor family. And I think the fact that she has to work her day job, she can't just give it up, that would actually be something we could explore. I think a lot of people wanted to know what was going to happen with Meg and Matty and if they were going to make the distance or not and what would happen with their relationship. And yeah, potentially new characters. We were kind of thinking that maybe Casper could have like a K-pop star girlfriend, and maybe we could evolve Casper a bit and show a slightly nicer side to him and make him grow a little bit more. Yeah, there's so many different routes we could take it, and also just things from our real experience, such as being in the studio with different producers and what it's like being at a songwriting camp. And you know, there's definitely things that we could bring in from our real life. So there's loads of ideas there. It may or may not happen, but yeah, there's definitely lots to play with if we did get the chance to do it.
Do you reckon Meg and Alana will ever head on a big world tour?
Yes, I think that they would. And I feel like if we were to ever like show their journey, it would be amazing to see them like rise to fame and go from just local open mic nights to growing and growing and growing until they finally were on a tour. And that is something we would have like maybe like to explore in the future. But yeah, I think that we wanted to show not like the movie version of it where everything happens within 1 week and they go from an overnight success from nobody to super world famous. We wanted to show more of like how realistically it would happen in real life rather than sort of like the X Factor dreamscape version of it.
So how quickly did it work for you?
For me, in terms of like music and stuff, it took a really long time. I mean, I started writing when I was 16 and I am 35 now, and I still feel like there's so much more that I want to achieve and do. But I think from initially like pitching out my music to sort of getting my first ever songwriting cuts, probably a couple of years and a lot of songs, a lot of writing and working with people. But the cool thing about music is that you can have a song that's, you know, years old that suddenly finds a home that you didn't expect. I've just had a song that was 6 years old that's had a placement in Japan with a Japanese singer. And it was something I'd long forgotten about and, you know, had no memory of really. And suddenly I was like, oh, this is cool. It's being cut with a cool Japanese artist. So I think it's like there is kind of no beginning, middle and end. You just write songs, do cool things, work with cool people, and then hopefully things trickle out and manage to find a home. And yeah, it's just like an ongoing journey rather than something that starts and finishes, which is what we just hopefully want to try and portray with our story.
How often does a song not work for you that you just need to give it to another artist?
I mean, for me, it actually doesn't work in terms of like it, the like, I think there's this thing, this perception that maybe like the dreg songs go to other artists, but actually your absolute best songs have to go to other artists because they will only like cut songs that are great. So if anything, I would say that it's my best work that goes for to pitch to other people. But I definitely have, I've got the writer's mind, the songwriter's mind, and the personal, it's an emotional song for me mind. And there are a couple of songs that are just so personal, I probably wouldn't ever let them go because they just mean too much to me to give them to a different person. So yeah, it's not really about good or bad, but I think whether it's personal or more universal. And yeah, it's those. But then also you do bring a lot of your personality and your experience to songs, to other people as well. But just maybe in a less sort of detailed, it's specifically about me kind of way.
So before the last question, yes. What is next that readers can look forward to, either from you individually or you and Ellie?
So for me, I've been working on quite a few different YA kind of ideas, which my agent is currently pitching out. I've got one book which is for more of like a middle grade audience, which is very much inspired by Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging and that kind of younger, it's schoolgirls, it's fun, a bit like Derry Girls kind of vibes. And that was really good fun to write. And yeah, a bit less of the music theme, but there is bits of music in it as well. Like there's a character who's a musical theatre star. And I've been working on another kind of older YA, kind of like a drama sort of story. And yeah, I've also got this completely bonkers mutant shark attack story, which I worked on over lockdown. It was very much a case of I didn't want to write anything too realistic. I didn't want anything too fluffy and sweet. I was feeling so fed up in lockdown, as we all were. And it was just this bizarre thing that came out of me. It's very like camp lo-fi, mad scientist, like all the tropes kind of thing. But equally with like characters that feel quite real and teenagers who are, you know, it's crazy circumstances, but realistic reactions to them. But it's so bonkers, I just think it's a bit out there and I don't know if anyone would actually pick it up, but I feel really, I hope that once I can kind of make a name for myself and show that I'm not completely crazy, that maybe somebody will take a chance on it.
Well,
so yeah, that all sorts of things.
Sorry to interrupt you, but maybe if you said it would Jaws inspire, some more people would take interest.
Yeah, and funnily enough, I had never seen Jaws before writing it. And one of my best friends said, you cannot have written a shark attack book and not have seen Jaws. So we sat down and watched it for the first time. And there was so much, like completely by accident, that was really similar. And she was like, you've just completely ripped this off. I said, no, I haven't. I've never seen Jaws. Like it must have just seeped in via osmosis somehow. So yeah, it is kind of like Jaws, but up to like a completely bonkers level. So I would love to do something more with that, but I'm also doing more serious, not quite so crazy things as well. And I know that for Ellie, I think that she's been working on some bits and pieces for maybe younger children, like picture books. And she is also working on all of her CBeebies compositions. So she writes music for children's TV shows on CBBC. And I think she's got quite a lot of work with that on at the moment. So that's a lot of what she's going to be doing moving forward. So yeah, and then who knows, maybe something more will happen with songs and we'll just see what happens.
So lastly, where can readers find you online?
I am on most of the things. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, under Becky Jerrams. I have a very inactive Facebook group account, but you can find me on there as well. I'm on TikTok, but I don't really know how to use TikTok. I tend to use it to stalk everyone else, but don't post a lot of videos myself, but I feel like I should try and learn. Or you can send me an email or come on my website. I'm pretty easy to find. So yeah, if you type Becky Jerrams in, then you'll find all sorts of things for me. Ellie is under Ellie Wyatt Music. She's also on Twitter, Instagram. I think it's Ellie Wyatt Music for most of her handles. And she's also on her website. And we have a joint website for the Songs You've Never Heard as well, which we've got all of the actual songs on and all of our events and photographs and a playlist that we've collected from people that we've gone to see. So you can see everything from the project on the website as well.
Thanks so much for agreeing to do this. You've been a delight to have.
Oh, thank you so much, Darcy. It was so lovely to come on, and your questions are just so thoughtful. And yeah, it's just been really nice to just chat about it with you. And thank you for the support and for coming to our book launch as well when we had it in Farnham. It was just, yeah, lovely to have you there.
You're absolutely welcome. Thanks again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.